Herzlich willkommen beim OMR Podcast mit Philipp Westermeier.
Jetzt, fast eine Woche nach dem Festival, geht es uns hier allen wieder einigermaßen normal. Unser Büro sieht noch aus wie ein riesen Müllhaufen, aber auch das wird in den nächsten Tagen besser werden. Wir machen jetzt mal wieder einen Podcast auf Englisch. Und das machen wir eigentlich nicht so gerne, weil die Erfahrung zeigt, dass Leute in Deutschland deutschsprachige Podcasts irgendwie lieber hören oder lieber durchhören. Dennoch geht es in diesem Podcast halt um Podcasts. Es ist ein Podcast über Podcasting sozusagen. Und unser Gast Matt Lieber ist eine der absoluten zentralen Figuren dieser Industrie gerade. Er hat die Firma Gimlet mitgegründet, so ein Podcast-Studio in New York, das gerade vor ein paar Monaten an Spotify verkauft wurde für über 200 Millionen Dollar. Und er ist jetzt sozusagen bei Spotify der entscheidende Mann mit rund um das Thema Podcast. Er war auch bei uns in Hamburg. Wir haben uns in Hamburg getroffen auf dem OMR-Festival. Er hat dann einen super Vortrag, eine Keynote gehalten. Und ich hatte die Chance, da mit ihm ein bisschen über das Business zu sprechen, rauszubekommen, was Podcast-Hosts in USA verdienen, rauszubekommen, wie groß Gimlet ungefähr war, was sie jetzt bei Spotify vorhaben und so weiter und so weiter. Er hat unter anderem auch auf dem Festival verraten, dass sie den Vertrag hier mit Fest und Flauschig für 3 Jahre verlängert haben, also dem größten deutschen Podcast. Der ist offensichtlich 3 weitere Jahre bei Spotify. Also Sachen kommen jetzt hier raus, waren in seiner Keynote drin. Ich hoffe, alle, die zumindest die Podcasts gerne hören, lernen jetzt was über das Business dahinter. Und über vielleicht die Entwicklung und die Zukunft dieses ganzen Themas. Viel Spaß jetzt auf Englisch, natürlich mit dem Matt Lieber von Gimlet und jetzt Spotify. Und mit mir. Also, auf geht's.
Was?
A very special guest. He's probably the grandmaster of podcasting. I mean, I get a lot of respect in Germany for doing much for podcasting, but he's doing that on a global level, and in the US especially. He's the founder of, one of the founders of Gimlet Media, who recently sold to Spotify. Welcome, Matt Lieber.
Thank you for having me, Philip.
Yeah, thank you for making the trip over from New York to Hamburg.
I'm thrilled to be here, and I didn't know what to expect because I heard about this secret conference in Hamburg, and then I get here and it's like 50,000 people and everyone's scrambling around looking down at the next event they're going to attend. It's an incredible energy here, so happy to be here.
And I mean, one thing I want to share is that, like, we met last summer in New York, and after we talked for a while, I said, look, can you make the trip over? Were you willing to come? And then I, like, gave you some details and said, look, we're gonna shuttle you over. I said, okay, if that's happening, I'm in. I'm doing it. Like, no thinking. Immediately, yes. That was awesome. So thank you for that. Let's talk some podcasting.
Yeah.
Maybe, like, the one thing everybody wants to know: you sold Gimlet recently. Why did that happen?
Yeah, so let me step back and say I started Gimlet 5 years ago with my co-founder Alex, and for both of us it arose. Gimlet, which is an audio company, arose out of an obsession with the medium of audio, and we I had grown up listening to the radio, and I always loved the sense of emotional connection that you had with the person who was telling you a story, who you couldn't see them, but you were having, in a way, you were in a conversation with them, and you could imagine them in your own head. And so, you know, we started the business in 2014, and we started with a few shows. Startup, which was a business show, which told the story of forming our own company. And then we had Reply All, which is now one of the biggest tech podcasts on earth. And then we made about 15 more. But what we found 5 years in is the business was going well. Like, audiences were scaling. We were reaching millions of people globally. But there were some, and we had built a nice advertising business, and we were starting to build an IP business where we take our shows and bring them to television and film. But we found that there were some sort of fundamental infrastructure issues that were limiting how big it could really be and how much it could flourish. And they're basically three things. One is, we because of the nature of the way these podcasts are distributed, which is via RSS feeds, we didn't get data back on who our listeners were or how they were listening to our content. So we didn't get a lot of data. Which limited the amount of monetization we could do. So certain advertisers are willing to take a bet and take a chance on podcasts, but in order to get, you know, into much bigger deals with bigger brand advertisers and operate at a global scale, you need to have the data back, and you need to be able to do other forms of monetization. And then the third was discovery. So If you talk right now in where I come from in the U.S., it's about 1 in 3 people have listened to a podcast in the last month. And if you ask the ones that haven't listened to a podcast, they're kind of interested, but they don't listen to podcasts. If you ask them why, it's very simple. They say, "I don't know where to start. I don't know what I would like." And so it's a problem of like finding a show, the right show for the right person. And so when we started talking to Spotify. More seriously, last fall, we realized that Spotify is the largest global music platform. They have 207 million people listening to audio every month. So they have the data, they have the global scale, and they've solved discovery. I mean, a huge problem that Spotify solved in music was discovery, like helping people discover music they love. And so we thought that between Gimlet, which is, you know, great storytelling and content, and Spotify, the world's largest music platform, we could help solve those three problems and make podcasting as big and make it flourish in the way that it should, so that more people can have the experience that, you know, that we're having listening now.
And the numbers that were rumored, like $220 million, is the rumor. Is that close to reality?
So we don't comment on the price, but yeah, that's, you know, roughly the number that was reported in the press.
Okay. So also a very good deal for the investors, for the founders, I guess.
Yeah, we were happy, and our employees were happy, because for us, I mean, Gimlet is really a content company. It's a storytelling company, and so I think, you know, the team was happy, and all the employees had equity, but they were more happy that they were just we could all continue doing our work, but do it on a bigger scale and reach more people.
And is the label, the brand Gimlet, is that going to remain?
The Gimlet brand is going to remain. So we're going to operate as a, you know, quasi independent subsidiary of Spotify. So we have offices in Brooklyn where we met.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, the offices we met in,
we in Fort moved, Greene.
Did I meet you? I think I met you in Gowanus.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes,
yeah.
And we moved because we built 13 new studios in Fort Greene. So we moved a couple blocks away. It's the largest podcast production facility on earth, and we're staying there. So we're keeping our offices, keeping the brand, keeping the team, and so Gimlet will operate sort of as a sub brand.
Is the idea of Spotify to buy you, is that also like a page from the Netflix playbook? To like have original content on the Spotify platform, so like the way Netflix does that.
You know, many people have made this observation, but I don't think of Spotify as running the Netflix playbook necessarily. And I think there are some similarities between the way television and video has evolved, and the way that podcasts have evolved. But there's also differences. And so, actually, if you, for me, the metaphor in video is. You know, there's Netflix, which is a big global platform where it's where, you know, big expensive productions with stars, and it's about owning the hits. But then there's also YouTube, which is a long tail of user generated content, which is a platform that makes it easy for everyone to find their own voice. And I think you're going to see something similar evolve in podcasting, where, you know, there's now 500,000 or 600,000 podcasts. Anyone can have a podcast. That's what I love about it. But we think there's a special amount of value that comes to the head of the tail, to the franchises, and that's what Gimlet is about. It's about building franchises. Spotify announced, actually, when they acquired us, they also acquired another company called Anchor, which is a platform. It's the easiest way for anyone to make a podcast. So it's the metaphor there is a little bit more like YouTube. And so I think Spotify is going to be a platform where there's going to be big premium where there are big premium franchises, but also where there's, you know, hundreds of thousands of other shows of every variety, and where any creator can find their voice and their audience.
Now that we try to push the podcast thing here in Germany a little bit, and one thing that's happening more and more is that German celebrities, they are like willing to talk, or they even like approach us and say, look, I want to do a podcast. They're like, what do you think about doing a podcast together? Is this thing also happening to you, that like people, brands, celebrities all of a sudden like want to talk to Gimlet and want to see like what's in it for them in this podcasting game?
Yes. Yes, we definitely have more big voices and big stars coming into podcasting. I mean, when we started, it was like, it was hard to get anyone interested in making a podcast because no one really knew what it was, and it wasn't perceived as big audiences. Now you have media franchises built on it. So and they're across all categories. So the New York Times has The Daily, which is, listened to by millions of people every day to get their news. ESPN has a big podcast, Disney is doing podcasts. And big names. Actually, one thing that I've observed just in the last few months is the U.S. 2020 presidential election is kind of kicking into gear. And it's interesting to watch which of the presidential candidates who are vying for the Democratic nomination are choosing podcasts. Actually, the candidate who most recently has the most momentum is a guy from who's a mayor of a town in Indiana.
Mayor Pete
Buttigieg, and he rocketed from relative obscurity to the top two or three positions in the polls, and he's been on every podcast. And I think that podcast became a very important channel for him to make an emotional connection with listeners and to tell his story. I think you'll see more of that.
What's the biggest or largest podcast in the U.S. by numbers of listeners?
I don't know what the biggest podcast is, but certainly Joe Rogan, which is an interview show hosted by a sort of comedian philosopher, where he has long, baggy conversations with other comedians and MMA fighters and also intellectuals and academics, is one of the biggest. The New York Times Daily, Reply All, which is one of our shows, is a show about the internet, and is listened to millions of people by millions of people every month. Is up there.
What scale can you reach? I mean, if you're like, let's say, Reply All, or if you're like Joe Rogan, how many listeners can you have? Or do they have?
You can have millions of listeners.
Yeah. Weekly?
Weekly.
Not daily, but weekly.
Yeah, weekly. I think the New York Times has reported that they have over a million listeners daily.
And, I mean, there's a lot of speculation on the internet about Joe Rogan and his revenue. I mean, I read speculation that he's, like, making, I don't know, 50, 60 million a year in revenue from podcasting, advertising revenue. Uh-huh. Do you believe that could be true?
I have no insight on Joe Rogan's revenue. What I do know is that, I mean, when I listen to the show, he certainly has, he's got plenty of ads in there, and his audience trusts him. So when he recommends a product and he talks about it in a way that's, convincing, and that he's used it, and it's almost like a personal endorsement, or in some cases it is, that's very powerful to drive the commercial business. So I don't know. I genuinely don't know what the numbers are, but
I mean, there's probably already like podcast millionaires in the U.S., meaning people that like make more than a million a year in income from podcasting.
There are definitely, I would say, tens of people, tens or dozens, if not more, people who are making seven figures in podcasting today. But we think we're just at the beginning. So if you look at the overall, like revenue size of podcasting, it's quite small in relation to the number of people who are listening and how much time they're spending. This year podcasts will probably be, somewhere around $500 million industry in the U.S. market. Radio is an $18 billion industry. And the discrepancy by the amount of time spent between radio and podcasting is not that great. Mm. Actually, one of the insights that I think that Daniel Ek, who's the CEO of Spotify, had, and when Alex and I, my co-founder, first sat down with him to talk about, potentially having Gimlet be acquired by Spotify, one of his, I think, big, simple but very big insights was that if you look at the size of the video market, to put together all of television, video, subscriptions, advertising, it's about $1 trillion. And if you look at the size of the audio business, talking about all of audio monetization, ads, subscriptions, music sales, it's about $100 billion. It's one tenth. But the amount of time we spend watching video and television and the amount of time we spend listening is not that great. It's maybe, 2.5 hours of listening and, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 hours of watching. And so his question was, like, do we really think that the eyes are 10 times more valuable than the ears? No. No, maybe they're a little, maybe they're somewhat more valuable, but not 10 times. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to close the gap, and I think we're just at the beginning of that effort.
Weil die Kolleginnen und Kollegen von Instafo, also der Jobplattform für den Tech- und Sales-Bereich, von der ich hier schon häufiger berichtet habe, mittlerweile bei uns doch groß engagiert sind hier im Podcast. Ihr hört immer wieder hoffentlich von Instafo. Deswegen habe ich die Kollegen vor kurzem aber selber persönlich kennengelernt und war wirklich sehr angetan. Sie haben mir dazu erzählt, es gibt eine neue Finanzierungsrunde in die Firma. 10 Millionen werden da investiert. Das ganze Thema wird also immer relevanter. Daher nochmal hier mit Nachdruck der Hinweis. Wer Menschen sucht im Bereich Tech und Sales, denkt an Instafo. Die haben da scheinbar wirklich eine neue magische Soße gefunden, wo sie über ihre Plattform ein automatisiertes Matchmaking zwischen Arbeitnehmer und Arbeitgeber ermöglichen. Und das ist im direkten Marktvergleich 3-mal effektiver, was die Quote von Bewerbung zu Einstellung angeht. Hilft natürlich auch, dass sie bereits über 100.000 passende Talentprofile auf der Plattform haben und dass man sehr, sehr schnell ins Gespräch kommt. Innerhalb von 48 Stunden bewerben sich die ersten Talente bei den Arbeitgebern oder man kann sogar als Arbeitgeber einer vorselektierten Gruppe an Talenten aktiv eine Nachricht schicken oder sie zum Chatten einladen, um sich noch schneller kennenzulernen und zu prüfen, könnte das passen. Also nicht nur ich und die Geldgeber offensichtlich glauben an Instafo, sondern auch mittlerweile über 1.800 Firmen, darunter O2, RTL, HelloFresh, MyPoster, viele, viele weitere. Instafo ist auf OMR Reviews bestbewertet, 4,8 Sterne in der Kategorie Recruiting Plattform. Firmen, die nun Instafo ausprobieren möchten, sehr gerne. Ihr spart außerdem 500 Euro auf die erste Besetzung, wenn ihr euch anmeldet über Instafo mit Doppel-F, instafo.com/OMR. Zurück zum Podcast.
So podcasting as a commercial thing will be about ads. It's not going to be about paid podcasts.
Well, for now, today, we're primarily an ad-supported medium, and you can hear all of our podcasts. I mean, you can hear all of Gimlet podcasts right now across most all podcast platforms. And any podcast you listen to on Spotify, you can listen on the free tier or the paid tier. So there's no distinction between the paid experience and the free experience on Spotify when it comes to podcasts. You know, I do believe other business models will begin to materialize, including, you know, subscription bundles, you know, a la carte purchases in the way that you see with audiobooks. And there will be, I think, quite a bit of experimentation in the next few years.
What's the average CPM a US podcast can fetch? Like a podcast that has like quality listeners and has like substantial reach. What can you ask CPM based?
CPMs tend to be, you know, $20 to $30 for premium podcasts. And then Gimlet CPMs and are, you know, tend to be higher than that, tend to be $60 and up, depending, and then up from there, depending on the audience. And our argument was that, you know, that podcast advertising is different than other forms of advertising. It's different than radio. And start with the idea that audio is just a great medium. It's a great medium for advertising for the same reason, like, it's a great medium, period, which is that it builds emotional affinity and personal connection. And when you're reaching a podcast audience, they are not just sort of, they're not getting it's not like they're walking through a restaurant and hearing a radio ad that's packed in a 6-minute pod together with a whole bunch of other ads. And it's not been pushed to them. And in podcast ads, someone has raised their hand and said, I'm interested in that show. I'm going to subscribe to it. I'm going to, in some cases, download it or stream it. And you're getting 100% share of voice of a super engaged audience that most of the time is listening with earbuds in their ears. So it's a higher quality impression and a higher quality audience. You know, our audience tends to be younger, more affluent, and more educated than the general population.
But you still go with CPMs. You can't ask for a flat price.
Primarily, we transact still on a CPM basis and primarily on the download basis. One of the things I think that we will transition to over time, particularly now that we're part of Spotify, is selling on streams and impressions, because we can now verify every listen.
So reach has to still be a factor. You can't just say, look, this is the show, it's big, I don't care how big it is, it's that is the host, he's saying this, that's the price. End of discussion.
Well, I guess it depends on how good a salesperson you are, Philip, but we transact on CPMs. So, okay. You know, we say...
I mean, I see the Tim Ferriss of this world. Like, if you want to advertise with Tim Ferriss, mm-hmm. for instance, he just gives you a flat price, and there's no discussion about reach or like a number of listeners. It's just his flat price.
Well, he knows how big his audience is. He knows how many times his show is going to get downloaded, and so I assume there's some, you know, arithmetic that connects the flat price to the number of downloads. One of the things about podcasting that's different than like display advertising is podcasters generally know with a lot of certainty how many listeners are going to reach with any particular episode because it's a habitual medium. And so it's not as though we have podcast episodes that go viral and it, you know, we may reach, you know, 10 million impressions or we may reach 100,000. Pretty much episodes are consistent in their
there's downloads. No explosive, even like with new hosts, there's no explosive growth. I mean, you have to like really earn your audience over time.
You generally do. I mean, there are some examples, but in general, building a podcast audience is about regularly releasing programming that resonates with your audience over the course of years. Yeah. And we've never seen audiences shrink. We've only seen our audiences grow organically over time.
What's the an okay growth factor? If you look at a new podcast format, a new host maybe coming out, or like even the established ones, what do you think they have to grow by year over year to be like within the norm?
I think it's impossible for me to answer that question because I think it totally depends on, well, first of all, why you're doing it. And if you're doing it to make an ads business, you know, and you're trying to reach a general audience, then you want to get into the, you know, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of downloads. That should be kind of the aspiration. But if you have a very specialized podcast that is about, you know, if you're doing a podcast about, I'm making this up, but, you know, high-speed rail, and you're just reaching engineers who are building high-speed trains, and there's a bunch of technologists and advertisers who value that audience really highly, then you may only need to reach 1,000 of them to be able to have that be, you know, super valuable.
I mean, that's one other thing. A lot of companies have discovered the podcast field or the podcast medium, and it feels like there's all of a sudden like content marketing agencies,
yes,
media agencies of all types. They saw like all of a sudden now are asked by corporations or by companies to produce podcasts for brands. I mean, that feels like at some point it's just too much. Nobody can listen to like 5 different car company podcasts or 7 different hair shampoo podcasts. What's your take on that?
Yeah, so pretty early on in the company, we set up a division called Gimlet Creative to be our audio agency that would work with brands to develop their audio strategy. And I think part of that involves making podcasts for them. So like we make an original podcast for Nike called The Phenom Effect, where we tell the story of Nike's women's athletes and sort of their path to success. You know, we make a podcast for Gatorade about, we make a podcast about Gatorade featuring the world's best athletes. We make a podcast for Adobe about design and the nature of design today. And what we find with those is they're less about reach and they're more about creating a framework for the brand to tell their story, to tell a story in a deeper way. I do think that, you know, the beautiful thing about that is that you have the time and space to be able to tell a long story. If you wanted to do like a 6-part, 30-minute per episode documentary series in video, that would be an extremely intensive, very expensive undertaking. You can do a lot of the storytelling that reflects that in audio in a lighter weight way. What we're finding, though, is that brands need a broader audio strategy. So with the rise of on-demand listening of audio, with the rise of, you know, Spotify and music, and now with the rise of podcasts, it's just becoming a more important channel for brands to consider as they think about how they tell their story to consumers. And it doesn't just mean original podcasts for brands. It also implies advertising, what your presence is going to be on Amazon Alexa, what your voice is going to be. And so if you look at the Fortune 100 brands today, you know, I would say 100% of them have a style guide that says, here's what our logo looks like, and here are our colors, and here's the Pantone colors, and here's the fonts and the typefaces, and here's our sort of principles around copy. And very few of them, if any, have an audio style guide. And our belief is that brands need to have that now. Brands need an audio strategy. And so Gimlet Creative, which is our in-house agency, basically helps brands develop their audio strategy and find their voice.
How big is Gimlet in terms of employees right now?
We're 125 people.
And in revenue?
We don't disclose revenue.
Let me take a wild guess.
I'm now part of one of the transitions is now part of a public company, and I so I'm under the, you know, under the regulations that implies.
Okay. But you can shake your head yes or no. Nobody's gonna see that on the podcast, but I would guess it's probably like between like 35 million, 40 million. Mm. You seem to be more shaking yes than no.
I'm not commenting.
Okay. Like one last question on the advertising thing. Is it like all the native advertising, or like hosts sharing the messages, or like how much is that? Is ad injection like audio snippets that are just being injected into podcasts that have nothing to do with the host?
Well, I would separate those two things. Vast majority of our advertising right now is native. It's read by the host in the voice of the host, and that was important to us because we wanted the advertising to feel like it was part of the experience of the show that was additive to the listening experience. All of our advertising is also dynamically inserted. So anytime that you hit play on a stream or you download an episode, we are injecting a new ad, and it depends on where you are in the world. So we'll geo-target. It depends on when you're downloading it. And we target by device. So they're both native and dynamically inserted, which means we can flight advertising. I would say there's going to be at some point, you know, there is going to be a need for programmatic audio solutions where, you know, where brands are able to buy across a network or across shows to be able to get the scale and the targeting they need. And it's early days on that. And one of the things that's really important to us is that we preserve what is great about the current podcast advertising model as we move into a programmatic future. So that's something we're thinking a lot about.
So you think programmatic is going to play a bigger role?
Yeah, I think it has to deliver the kind of scale to grow the audience. I mean, I'm sorry, grow the industry.
Okay. So right now the breakdown is probably like 80 and 20%?
On podcast advertising, I would say it's... I actually don't know what the number is, but I bet it's more like 95.5.
95%
native advertising. Wow. Is that how it is here in Germany?
In Germany, it's. I would say it's also very native dominated.
Yeah.
Except for the podcasts that come from the radio stations, there's hardly any.
Yeah.
Like classic audio ads.
And what is your view on that? On how that will do you think that will change?
I mean, yeah. I mean, the thing is what you say, like scale, right? I mean, getting scale probably, and like. The advertiser requests are such that maybe at some point you have to like come up with a more automated solution. Yeah. And plus something that I hear a lot if I talk to potential podcast hosts, and like if a podcaster has reached a certain level, they're all like really careful like with the advertising they want to like be associated with, especially like if you like I'm talking to musicians or athletes.
Yes.
of household names in Germany to do a podcast. If you talk to them, they'll be like, okay, we can like do ads, but only this and this company.
Right.
And then that's not going to work with native because there's so many companies that would want to advertise, but right. If that host is not going to accept them, we get a problem.
Right. So probably what I think will happen is the market will bifurcate and you'll have a high-end premium native tier of advertising where the host has opted in. It will be higher price. It won't so much be about reach. It will be about getting to the right audience. And then there will be a tier that will be more programmatic. It will be about scale. It will probably not be host read. I still think that it can be produced beautifully and have breakthrough ad creative, but it'll be about scale and reach and efficiency. And I think that the market will begin to divide.
We spoke about the biggest podcast in terms of reach, Joe Rogan and New York Daily.
Yeah.
What are the biggest podcasts? I mean, take a guess. I mean, you probably don't know, but as a guess, like in terms of monetization.
I think there are certain segments of advertisers that are willing to spend more, you know, on a CPM basis and are willing to spend more to reach the right audience, and it's sort of business and technology shows. So, you know, our biggest performers revenue wise are, you know, Startup, which is a business show, Reply All, which is a tech show. If you look at, you know, I would imagine shows like, you know, shows like Freakonomics,
Sports podcasts, like they're huge. They seem to have a lot of advertising. If I listen to Bill Simmons,
Simmons, I think for mass audiences, like pop culture, sports, where you do begin to hear, you know, big brand advertisers, CPG, auto.
All of a sudden, I mean, I listen to like a lot of US podcasts, for instance, Bill Simmons.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I mean, he used to have all these startup companies there and SeatGeek and all these companies.
Yeah.
And now, like a couple of weeks ago, for the first time, he was like about Mercedes and then car. I was like, what the hell?
Yeah, that's good, right?
I mean, for me as a podcast entrepreneur, it was very interesting and a very good sign, true.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, this is what always happens in new medium. I mean, this is what happened when cable television came along. This is what happened when the web first came along. Is the first advertisers tend to be the more experimental, direct response advertisers who are comfortable going in and spending money without clear measurement. Because they're finding other ways to try to measure the return on spend, and big brand advertisers come in later. It's the sort of the second or third phase where they feel like, okay, we're comfortable that there's enough scale here. We're comfortable that there's measurement, and we know how many people we're reaching, and I think we're just about to now reach that point broadly across the ecosystem where more established, mature brands are comfortable coming in and spending money.
Hinweis auf Findling. Findling ist eine sehr erfolgreiche SEO-Agentur, die bis vor einiger Zeit noch Webstube hieß und mir vor allen Dingen deswegen ins Auge gestochen ist, weil ihre Masterclass beim OMR-Festival ruckzuck ausverkauft war. In Minuten wollten Menschen hören, was die Kollegen von Findling zum Thema SEO zu sagen haben. Ein Grund dafür sicherlich die Referenzen. Findling arbeitet unter anderem für Firmen wie Snox, Ergotopia, Dermanostik oder Mein BAföG. Der Fokus ist also, Firmen über Performance-SEO beim Wachsen zu helfen. Wer rausfinden möchte, ob sich für ihn auch SEO lohnt oder die Ansätze von Findling vielleicht konkret lohnen, der kann sich eintragen. Es gibt keinen Sales Call, sondern eine kostenlose Beratung unter findling.de/OMR. Also auf der Landingpage eintragen und dann gibt es eine Beratung, wenn es richtig gut läuft, vielleicht von Maurice Marinelli, dem Gründer persönlich. Zurück zum Podcast. So you're saying at some point, podcasting, advertising and podcasts in the US could turn into a billion-dollar business?
Oh, absolutely. I think we're 1 to 2 years away from it being a billion-dollar business. But I think the question is, like, when is it going to be, you know, tens of billions of dollar business? You know, my feeling, so radio and I'm very cognizant that I'm in Germany and I'm talking about US numbers, but those are the ones I know best.
Yeah, people care, yeah.
You know, radio is an $18 billion business in the US. My view is, like, I don't know, 80% of that listening is going to move to on demand, and an on demand impression is more valuable than a radio impression because it is someone who's self-selected in. You have data to target them, and it's a more direct, intimate experience because they're listening in their ear, not in some big noisy environment. And so I think that those dollars will shift and become even more valuable. And then, of course, you know, sports and news will remain a live, linear experience.
I heard the rumor that the New York Daily podcast is doing $65 million a year in revenue. Dollars.
The New York Times?
Yeah.
I haven't heard that.
You would think it's too high?
That would surprise me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But one thing that's already happening that I think is impressive, you just mentioned in the beginning, IP. What IP means is you're building podcasts, you're building a podcast franchise that then gets spun out into television, into movies. That's already happening. You've created some shows or some brands,
yep,
that you've sold, I think, to Netflix, right?
Amazon. So we've made a couple of television shows. We made a show based on our own story. So we had this show Startup, like I mentioned, which was a documentary about starting the company. That became a network television show on ABC. And then more recently, Homecoming, which was our first scripted series. It was a thriller podcast that did really well as a podcast. It was a government thriller, and we developed it for Amazon Studios, and it stars Julia Roberts, and it was one of their biggest shows last year. So, you know, there was a period you walk around New York and every which way you looked, you saw a 50-foot billboard with Julia Roberts' face on it, and it all came from our podcast. And we have, you know, three or four shows in development now, for three or four other shows in development now as well.
And you're, like, scouting the talent, you're finding the story, you're finding the person that, you know, can be the podcast face then.
Yeah, well, we always start with the audio, so we're never trying to reverse engineer television. Because we think we'll fail at that, but we always start with this: what is the story and the world that will work in audio? And we develop all the IP ourselves and work with writers, bring in actors, and then we'll partner on the television. So, you know, with Amazon on Homecoming, the horror of Dolores Roach, which is a horror series that I love, came out around Halloween, and we're now developing that with Blumhouse Studios for TV. So,
So you're going to stay in the game long term? I mean, many times entrepreneurs sell their companies to bigger companies and then they leave. You probably, it sounds like you're going to stay in the industry for a while.
I am not going anywhere. Like, audio is a lifelong passion for me. It's what I grew up loving. It's always what I've come back to. And now I'm part of, what I believe is going to become the world's largest audio platform. So I'm not going anywhere.
So you'll not be a Spotify manager for the next years?
My title is now managing director at Spotify.
Okay. You're very close. Is your boss now Daniel Ek?
I work up through Courtney Holt, who's the VP of Spotify Studios, and Don Ostroff, who's the Chief Content Officer. But of course, talk to Daniel, and I'm close to the vision.
And Spotify is like making a big move in podcast. I mean, you know, not only acquiring you, but they're like making a lot of announcements. It seems like maybe podcasting is a solution for them to get more profitable. And then to like grow the company even further, right? I mean, it seems like music has sort of like they've almost achieved what they can achieve. Now, podcasting sounds like it's the next thing for them.
Yeah, I think Spotify has a lot more to achieve in music, but in audio more broadly. And you're right, like Spotify has been very aggressive, by far the most aggressive of the audio platforms in podcasting. It's one of the reasons we sold to Spotify is because we felt that the company had a real vision for how this would unfold and was very commercially motivated to win. And so even just so in the last, you know, 3 months, 4 months, the company has announced three acquisitions, Gimlet, Anchor, and also Parcast, which is another podcast studio based in LA that specializes in sort of in pulpy true crime content about the dark side of everything. So,
you know, crime podcasts in general are like seem to be like a huge genre, right?
Crime is a huge genre of podcasting, and so Parcast makes some of the biggest crime podcasts. They make, you know, serial killers and cults, and they have shows about conspiracy theories. And
what other genres are coming up?
I would say the you know, big genres right now are comedy, crime, interview based shows, sort of culture, and then we believe Gimlet has always been motivated to be sort of at the front edge of innovation, and our belief is that fiction is going to become scripted genre fiction is going to become a big category. So if you go back to the original golden age of audio, which was in radio 100 years ago, scripted radio drama was a big category. In fact, the big celebrities of the age were minted in radio. Orson Welles came out of radio. The big media companies of the 20th century came out of radio, NBC and CBS, and they were birthed by drama and news. And we think that, we think fiction is going to become a really interesting category. Things like soap operas and romance and scripted comedies and procedural crime shows and all of that.
So you're hiring writers and authors and all kinds of creative people to produce these shows, to think up these shows.
Yes. So we work. We have a scripted division, headed by the amazing Mimi O'Donnell, who came out of the theater world, and works with writers, novelists, playwrights to originate material.
Let's talk about other platforms. I mean, Spotify seems to be making a move here. The world is waiting for Apple, maybe for Amazon. I'm always surprised that, I mean, it seems to, for Apple at least, podcasts don't seem to play a major role. I mean, obviously they have a huge business and podcast is not that big in comparison. Yeah. But what's your perception of what do you hear in the market? Is like Apple has like a huge potential platform for that with iTunes, and why is nothing happening there?
So Apple is still the largest player in the market. Spotify is now number two, and we're the fastest growing. Go back 2.5 years ago, Spotify was single digit, if that, percentage of our distribution. Today it's 20%. And so you can, and it's pretty much stealing share from all the other players. But I think with these things, it comes down to focus. That's one of the things I learned, and I'm sure you have as an entrepreneur, is just focus wins. And if you look at the other big media platforms, they have, 5-6 other priorities that come in front of audio or come in front of podcasts, whether it's, video, television, device sales, other services. And I think it's really a question of prioritization. And for us at Spotify, the top priority is to become the world's, largest audio platform, and then enable 1 million creators to make a living off their art on the platform.
All right. Let's follow. First of all, best of luck with that. I mean, we'll definitely be following this and watching closely how you do it, how Spotify and maybe Gimlet and Spotify together, how this all goes on, how the story continues. Thank you very much for doing the podcast, for being here. For being a friend of Ormano.
Thank you for having me at OMR, Philip. I'm just amazed by what you have built here. The energy is, just even while we've been doing this interview, I think the crowds have ramped up. So congratulations, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Der Traum einer jeden CMO, eines jeden CRM-Managers ist es doch, einen neuen Kanal zu finden, wo ich Menschen erreichen kann und über den ich dann auch direkt Umsatz aufbauen kann. Und genau das ist halt WhatsApp. Viele haben es noch gar nicht gesehen, bis heute nicht, und vor allen Dingen nicht gesehen, dass dahinter Software nötig ist, um halt WhatsApp richtig im professionellen Kontext auf die Straße zu bringen. Einer dieser Partner, der sowas perfekt macht, ist Charles. Wir kennen die, wir sind da selber Nutzer und zum ganz kleinen Teil auch investiert. Was sie zum Beispiel machen, ist Folgendes. Ihr verbindet euer Shopsystem via Charles direkt mit WhatsApp. Und natürlich könnt ihr auch Emasis oder Klaviyo als CRM-Systeme für eine bessere Cross-Channel-Kommunikation nahtlos verbinden. Am Ende braucht man natürlich Telefonnummern, muss Leute anschreiben, weil dann kann man nicht nur Käufe initiieren über WhatsApp, sondern man kann auch gucken, ob jemand etwas in den Warenkorb gelegt hat und ihn dann wieder später aktivieren durch einen erneuten WhatsApp-Push. Also das System ist mittlerweile sehr, sehr ausgeklügelt. Es entstehen wirklich relevante Umsätze über den WhatsApp-Kanal dank Charles. Das Ganze ist natürlich auch DSGVO-konform und ISO-zertifiziert. Also, wer Lust hat, mehr zu verstehen und wissen möchte, wie das Zusammenspiel von Shopsystem und WhatsApp funktionieren kann, erhält alle Infos dazu unter hello-charles.com/OMR. hello-charles.com/OMR.
Zurück zum Podcast.